time opening.
We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity.
Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. The song you're hearing, Safety Dance, Safety Dance by the Men Without Hats. The songs that we'll play today are more from Hot Tub Time Machine 1 than 2 because I couldn't find the, all the necessary soundtracks online. But I am doing Hot Tub Time Machine 2. And when I say I am literally doing Hot Tub Time Machine 2 solo. Unfortunately, Dimitri Panos, who would have wanted to do it with me, he had not had a chance to see it. Nobody else really is into the Hot Tub Time Machine or this type of comedy, but I am. I absolutely love this type of cinema, and I get really excited. I know February and January are kind of dead months, but for me, when movies like this come out, I get really, really excited, and so I look forward to it. When I saw Hot Tub Time Machine 1, this was 5 years ago. It really blew me away. And I think a lot of people as well. Steve Pink directed that one as well. And for the most part, we have the same cast. But the biggest difference in Hot Tub Time Machine 1 and 2, which I don't know, if kind of going into it, if many people knew or not. But obviously for me, I did. And that's John Cusack is not present in the film. And I was worried how they were going to kind of pull it off. And story-wise, I think they did it brilliantly with using Adam Scott as, the relative of him, him being the father, John Cusack as the father, and never really appearing. So, but you still had that presence. Now, in the first movie, obviously, John Cusack's character is kind of the driving force. And the biggest knock on this is that Lou and Lugal are the main centerpieces, and Rob Corddry, even though he's funny, his character of Lou is not really likable, and so him as the driving force, while it may be funny at times, is not the best character to really drive it. And so I could see why people would argue for that, but me going into it, I knew it was really kind of short, right? It's 93 minutes long running time. So I knew, regardless of what the full story could have been, I was going to enjoy it regardless. My thoughts going into it right off the bat, given the advertising, were the fact that they perhaps would go through each sort of decade and things like that, rather than just with the first one. They took the structure of the first one where something happens, they go in the hot tub, and they kind of deal with a specific time. It isn't until the end that they have it almost as a bumper of, hey, let's go back to the Civil War. Let's go back to see Marilyn Monroe, the Beatles, and all these other sort of decades and events and how they changed the course of history. I really thought we would get more of that throughout, but I can't be upset. I really do think overall, if you look at the beats of the story, I enjoyed it. And it still has that same dynamic of Clark Duke's character, the son now playing, being the butler to Lou. So now it's just kind of a continuation of the same humor, but advancing it in a different way, because obviously they're trying to get their, father-son relationship in somewhat of an order that hasn't obviously ever been there, even after the discovery. So I certainly enjoyed that. Now, one of the things I found interesting, there was an article that came out about 9 movies that Hot Tub Time Machine 2 references within itself that are actually better than Hot Tub Time Machine 2. And I'm not going to argue that they aren't, because at the end of the day, the reason why they're referencing them is because they're so iconic. And so the list is Back to the Future, National Treasure, Lord of the Rings, The Terminator, Looper, Lawnmower Man, Boogie Nights, Superman, of course, the 1978 Richard Donner version, and Notting Hill. And then the extra, of course, is Fringe, the TV series, for which they of course, make fun of Clark Duke's character for Craig Robinson, Rob Corddry. I don't know quite the song. The humor of them singing is not that they actually know the song. It's the fact that they're so off sync, and the only thing that's, to me at least, recognizable, and if there's other stuff, please comment below, let me know. But it's just that you're a effing nerd. You're an effing nerd. And then kind of the way they improv off of that, to me, was brilliant. Especially, you know, Clark, his character, you know, I enjoy him because he's always, from the first movie and to this movie, been very factual, for both, and it comes off as funny, even though obviously for story purposes, it's almost a necessity. You know, he has to kind of keep us in check of, okay, what's the goal? Where do we go from here? And especially in this movie, where you don't have a John Cusack character to also help with that, you really need this because, you want, Craig's kind of the middle ground, but with Rob Corddry's character, he'll just, you know, we're getting into going to strip clubs and, you know, following drugs and going any which way that he can, which of course is really his arc, is that, you know, he's done this to himself and that lose Lou ultimately, and so he needs someone to rein him back in, and that's his son ultimately. So overall, I'll kind of talk about my favorite moments. This will be sort of a much shorter anatomy of movie than we're used to, only because it's very difficult for anybody, but certainly me, to go at length on any of this stuff solo. So I'll try to give you guys as much of my opinion, but also some facts as well, to kind of entertain you guys. So one of the things that I liked about this movie was, we had the composer Christoph Beck, who we've interviewed. Dimitri Panos interviewed him, and that's a great interview. So if you haven't already done so, check it out. You know, he really gets into the art of composing for comedies and doing it in the right way. Sort of, he, you know, there's various times when you play kind of to what the characters are doing. Other times, you know, one of his movies is what's the boss movie? Marissa, help me out here. Horrible Bosses, right? So with Horrible Bosses, a lot of the music that they had in that wasn't specific to the scene itself. It was specific to the characters of what they had in their minds. Now, how I would describe this music, for Hot Tub Time Machine 2, I think it's a little different. I think it's supposed to be ironic both to the characters and, the situation itself. Like I said, definitely if you want more of the ideas of how to really compose for comedy, check out that interview with Christoph Beck. He's been doing quite a lot. And so when I saw his name in the credits, I was really excited, for him, because he's getting to do a lot of these movies. Of course, this movie produced by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and distributed by Paramount Pictures. Release date was February 20th, and at a running time of 93 minutes. So overall, I mean, honestly, it could have perhaps been, let's say, 85 minutes and still, you know, gotten everything that it needed to. But honestly, if you're going to complain about 93 minutes, then you just didn't enjoy the movie to begin with. It's not getting I've spoken to it a little bit. A lot of knock on this movie is that the fact that John Cusack is not in the movie. And I understand that. I can see that argument, but to me, it is what it is. The movie overall finished the weekend box office at 5.9 million. According to Box Office Mojo, it came in seventh place behind 50 Shades of Grey, SpongeBob, the movie and all these other things. So it underperformed, and but ultimately its production budget was $14 million. I don't know what the prints and advertising per se are. I feel like, you know, there was some money spent there. You know, I think ultimately it can break even, and I wanted to. And, because to me, I just like these movies. You know what you're getting into with this movie. There's, you'll get surprises, quote unquote, but you won't be, you know, you can enjoy a stupid laugh at the expense of the characters that are there. One of the things that I enjoyed was they carried, as mentioned, right, the father-son relationship that kind of carried over from the first movie and was further developed. And one of the other things that was developed in this movie as well that carried through from the first was Craig Robinson's relationship with his wife. You know, last time there, he was trying to figure out, okay, how can he save that marriage? And this time around, he does the same thing. And then we get the introduction of Adam Scott, his character, you know, as the son of John Cusack. And I thought that was brilliant. I thought he did a really amazing job. Chevy Chase was back as the mysterious time warp guy, and I liked it. You know, he kind of got an appearance, but we didn't need him necessarily to explain things like he did last time. I think it was overall self-evident. And so it was just a nice little cameo that made us laugh, and then he was out. One of the things that I liked about this movie was the fact that it was a murder mystery in many ways. We think it's the guy from Lou's Company that perhaps did it. We think it could have been his competitor, or, you know, the guy at the party who Lou doesn't like that's offering him up the land. But it's fun seeing that in the future, because, you know, one of the greatest things was with the guy who was trying to sell the land. He has the massive sort of nightclub right within his own company, and all they're doing, it doesn't matter time of day, that they're just doing all these drugs, and specifically, obviously, they make all these modern day drugs, you know, 2025. So we get the ladybug, and the rule, of course, don't take it off. And, you know, with Adam Scott's character completely being exposed to this world, it's fun enough seeing our three main characters sort of in this more futuristic world and how they're going to deal with it. But overall, they seem comfortable. And it's ironic that Adam Scott, who knows of this time, he's the biggest fish out of water in some sort of sense. And that's why with the whole ladybug thing, you know, what is this? Oh, don't take it off for 24 hours. And you know, eventually the comedy becomes that he's the one who's trying to follow the rules. Whereas Lou, you know, whatever. Had I listened to every cocktail waitress, you know, I'd be a rich man or whatever he says. So I enjoyed that part of it. You know, it's anytime for me, you can tie in, for lack of, even though it's not 100% murder mystery, but anytime you can tie in a murder mystery with comedy, I'm in. Clue is one of my more all-time favorite movies, based off, obviously, the board game. And that actually has alternate endings, so it's pretty funny in itself. Let's see. One of the other aspects, you know, that I found one of the better scenes of this entire thing, and it didn't necessarily fit within the story per se, but certainly I think everybody was laughing, certainly in my theater, when Choosy Doozy came on. And it really, you know, it made fun of, because of how satirical it was, of the way reality's going, the way game shows are going. And I love that great line of like, oh, this is the number one rated show. The rest of them are, you know, they're just so sadistic of how these games are. And so you have Craig Robinson's character, and, you know, as soon as Lou, who of course doesn't know the rules, says, okay, quote, fuck a dude. And so that, you know, as people are voting, that becomes the thing. And so you have the virtual reality version of it. And the awkwardness after that followed. I mean, this was a great little sequence, because of how it changed so many of the characters in that moment, with the exception of perhaps Clark Duke's character, because, you know, that came later when Lou was just an arrogant a-hole, for lack of a better term. But it really affected certainly Craig, Adam, and all that. And for the most part, even though I liked how each of them had an arc, you know, you don't always get that. Because with Adam Scott's character, obviously he meets his wife and he finds he discovers who he ultimately can be, a sense of freedom and everything else. But while still holding on to the beliefs of a monogamous relationship, and not, you know, he can go off the deep end, so to a degree, but certainly he's not going to 100% now live that lifestyle, but he's aware of it and he has the freedom. Their relationship to me was hilarious of, you know, you're the best part of my world or whatever the heck they say. So that was great to watch. And, you know, I love, of course, the parts where, you know, Clark Duke, you know, as they go into the future, because, of course, this is supposed to be everything about Lou, but, you know, Lou's empire goes down the tubes, and who should take it on but his son, right? And he has, of course, the amazing hot wife, who, by the way, played by Bianca Haas. She, I was trying to get her in here. She's friends with a couple of hosts that I work with, but unfortunately, timing-wise, it did not work out for today. We'll try to get her in, perhaps, you know, just to do a quick interview. So look forward to that, hopefully. But, you know, and you think that because of the way Clark Duke's character is and has been, you know, ideally, if you've seen from one to the other, in terms of the movies, then you get a sense of, okay, maybe he's the responsible one. He's the driving force for Lugal. But it turns out that that's still not the case, that he, for the most part, has followed in the footsteps of not only his father, but his entire family, where he's an F-up. And it's great to see his wife kind of point that out to him and say, like, you're the same, you know, you need rehab. This is all you do. You just get messed up, drugged up. And this is the cycle that you've been in, just like your father. And that, as a catalyst to really bring him home, was, you know, I think plot-wise, sweet, you know. All right. Other favorite moments that I can speak of, you know, one of the things that's always funny to me is how you handle time travel, right? So, you know, they had their own kind of, you have Clark Duke kind of explaining the alternate universe and all that, obviously sort of a reference to Back to the Future, but it doesn't quite make sense because they're in the future rather than the past, and so they're using the future to fix the past. And, you know, all the things that were supposed to be invented to create this hot tub time machine, Lou obviously said and stated back in the past, but it ironically hasn't been yet invented in the future because they're in an alternate reality of the future. So it's one of the best ways of handling time travel that I can remember is from Austin Powers 2, where he says, you know, I've gone cross-eyed, and you have I forget his name at this time, but Austin Powers, you know, his kind of British intelligence agent, you know, he says, don't worry about this sort of thing, Austin. And then they turn and break down the fourth wall and says, and you shouldn't worry about it too. Because ultimately, any of these types of movies, whether it, funny as this one can be versus something, you know, Back to the Future, obviously still kind of in the comedy realm, but more serious side of it. And then you have other ones that are so much more serious. Terminator, one of the bigger ones. Looper, I haven't seen, so I can't speak to the tone of it per se. But it's just, no matter how you slice it and you dice it, time travel obviously is only a theory, and so you're going to be able to poke holes in it every which way, no matter how tight-knit it is. And so you just got to go with it. And I understand that sometimes people's problems with these, you know, specifically a movie that can be as idiotic as this one may be, but that's the whole fun. It's that the rules are just so chaotic. It's Dumb and Dumber meets time travel. That's it. You know, I mean, it's called Hot Tub Time Machine. Who, you don't have the DeLorean, you have a hot tub. Who would, that's the irony. It's a hot tub time machine. And I love when they try to explain it to, you know, they're trying to, at the time, the fiance, and it's like, oh, does this really exist? And what? Hot tub time machine? What is this? So that's part of the humor. Let's see. Obviously, I mentioned it at the top, but Steve Pink comes back to direct this movie. And, you know, I thought he did a good job. You know, I can't say, you know, whether or not he put a stamp and whatever else from this movie to that movie. But, I enjoyed it, so I cannot be mad at it. Production began in June 2013. And on January 2014, it was announced that the film would be released December 25th, but the release date was eventually pushed back. So many movies kind of did that. Paddington was originally supposed to come out in 2014 at around the holiday season, but it got pushed back. Just so many movies came out on that, especially like Christmas day and whatever else. It was too much. You know, Paddington, by the way, is a great movie, so you guys should check that out. And so I don't think it was a bad thing to push back the release date. Certainly would have gotten buried back then, let alone, you know, it's unfortunately not doing as great now. But I hope it picks up. So as stated, it's at about, right now, a week into its release, at about 8 million. You know, we'll kind of, I think we'll get there. We'll make the money back. Right now, reviews, on Rotten Tomatoes, 15% based off 74 reviews with an average rating of 3.3 out of 10. And, one of the reviews reads, "A shallow dip overflowing with juvenile humor. Hot Tub Time Machine 2 is a lukewarm sequel that's healthiest to avoid." So Metacritic gives it a 29 out of 100. So based off of 29 critics' reviews, indicating generally unfavorable reviews. So critics, I knew, were never going to like this movie. But fans, at least the people that I was with in a movie theater, you know, I understand stats and things like that. But the people I was in the movie theater in, it was overall packed. And I didn't go at a peak time either. And everyone laughed. So, you know. To me, I don't discredit that. I wish, you know, I definitely want to see more movies like this. Do I want to see Hot Tub Time Machine 3 necessarily? You know, I would hope that the script, you know, can kind of sort of live up, and it's not just, you know, they're trying to make a good movie, you know, at least to this level, rather than just, okay, hey. And but by the way, based off the numbers, I don't think they will, certainly. But, you know, if they do, I'll be going to see it. So that's kind of a condensed version of our typical anatomy of movie, which lasts much, much longer. But I, as said, it's a tall task to undertake for anybody. Hopefully you got something out of it. One of the great parts is that we can, you know, this is a forum to start a conversation, not necessarily end a conversation. We are a community of film fans, filmmakers, film critics, whatever the case may be. And so I urge you to comment however you may get this show, right? If you're on iTunes, let us know there. If you're on SoundCloud, let us know there. If you're on YouTube, comment below. If you haven't already done so, you know, please subscribe. Go to, you know, subscribe to the show on the various platforms I just mentioned. Go to youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork. And we have a whole slew of shows that are on there that are amazing, whether Profiles with Malone and Mance, we got Box Office Breakdown, we've got Guilty Movie Pleasures, which this eventually is probably going to be a guilty movie pleasure, certainly for me. You've got Jedi Alliance, which is Star Wars news-based show. You got Marvel Movie News, you've got DC Movie News, you got Meet the Movie Press, and you've got, of course, the Schmoes Know Movie Show on there as well. So a lot of lot of great content. We'll be launching a lot of great content as well in the coming weeks. So hopefully you enjoyed this. Continue the conversation, please, please. All this content is free to you guys. And so as you're listening to this song, again, this is from the first movie. You know, don't be afraid to, on the weekend, relax and take a dip in your hot tub time machine. We'll see you guys next time for another Anatomy of a Movie.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.